Well, good evening, brothers. It's 7 o'clock, and this is welcome to the September Mason Master Builder Call, Mason's Lead Better Master Builder Call. Of course, I'm Mike Clevenger, and I welcome those who have joined live on the call this evening, and certainly welcome those who are listening at a later time. As I mentioned last month, we continue to have a large number of brothers who download the calls, and I certainly appreciate that. I hope you get value out of that. And as you know, you can find all of those recordings on the Mason's Lead Better website, which is masonsleadbetter.com. So if you're listening later, thanks for downloading or listening online to this call. One thing that I just discovered is that if you were listening last month, my headset went nutty, and just before we started the call, I was conversing with worshipful brother Kirk Hab, and found out my headset microphone didn't work, so I'm using an alternate microphone through my webcam, so I hope that comes through loud and clear for everyone. So some other things I'd like to mention before we begin tonight's lesson. For us in Ohio, we are fast approaching our Grand Lodge session, which will be here in Columbus on 10/23 and 10/24. So I encourage you, if you haven't, go to our Grand Lodge website, freemason.com. For all of those details and for registration information about the Grand Lodge session. You know, in the Mason's Lead Better workshop, occasionally I'd have a brother who would say, well, you know, the Grand Lodge, and I'd stop him and I'd say, hey, brother, you are the Grand Lodge. So this is your opportunity to be a part of the Grand Lodge, the decisions made there, and I encourage you to go. I will be there in the vendors area with information about the upcoming three types of Mason's Lead Better workshops we'll be holding for Ohio Masons this Masonic year. And also at that time, you'll be able to register for these programs while you're at Grand Lodge there in the vendors area at our table for Mason's Lead Better. Let me tell you briefly about those three workshops. First of all, the first one is essentially the workshop that we conducted this year with some modification. That workshop is entitled Becoming Masonry. And again, the content is almost identical to what we presented this year, and it covers the topics of personal and Masonic development. And there will be 12 of these workshops conducted throughout the state. We'll strategically locate those so they're not too far away. As you recall, last year or this year, we did 25, one in each district. We're going to condense that, so there will be 12, and there'll be one close to your district. The second workshop is for those who have completed the first workshop. Either they completed it this year, attended this year, or in the upcoming Masonic year, attend. You have to attend that workshop before you can attend the second one. And this second one is designed to be a practical approach to leading effective change in your lodge. We are going to expand the topic of change that we touched upon in the Mason's Lead Better workshop this year, and actually give you practical approaches and tools to use in determining your lodge's personality, I like to call it, what your brothers would like to see happen in their lodge, what are some, recognizing some of your challenges, helping you take that information, conduct effective dialogues with your lodge brethren, and together determine a direction for your lodge. We're going to this is going to be a very practical, hands-on tool that hopefully will be very effective in improving your lodge. If your lodge is performing well now, there'll be information to help you improve that performance. So looking forward to this one. And this workshop will be held in 8 locations around the state. So we won't have as many of them, and hopefully you can attend one of those. The last thing that we're going to do, there will be a workshop. One workshop for those who, well, right now we're planning one, and if the demand is there, we'll maybe have more. But for those who would like to learn to facilitate a master builder group, as you know, the Grand Master wanted to see master builder groups conducted by either the district education officers, the district advisors, in conjunction with the representatives from the Grand Lodge Education Committee in each district. So this is a workshop to help those who have the desire and the necessary background to do this kind of thing, to help you facilitate those master builder workshops in your district or in your lodge. I'm going to be partnering with Brother Eric Combs with that endeavor. And Eric was on the call last month as we talked about these master builder groups. So look forward to that. And this is to give you practical guidance on working with other brothers and together studying those master builder materials, improving yourself, leading yourself, and then learning masonry and leading others. We're going to have to limit the number of participants. And so when the information comes available, if you're interested, you need to jump on that. Finally, before I forget it, these calls will continue. So the next call will be Wednesday, October 28th. And the topic to be announced. Probably at that point, right after Grand Lodge, we will be premiering the material in the Leading Effective Change workshop at that point. Still in production right now, so a little early to do it tonight. Well, you know, to get into what I would like to talk to you and bring some leadership information to you, but was prompted really by an email I received from a brother today who needed a worksheet that is attached to one of the lessons on Freemason University. And in responding to his request and retrieving the information he wanted, I stumbled upon this lesson that had been prepared a couple of years ago, and it's about one of Dr. John Maxwell's laws from the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. And I just thought while that topic was on my mind and I reread it, I thought it'd be a good topic for this evening. And this leadership information comes from Dr. Maxwell's Law Number 11, the Law of the Inner Circle. And what that law says is that a leader's potential is determined by those closest to him. And so I want to bring that message to you because it's all about building effective leadership teams, certainly in our lodges, to make effective lodges and improve masonry, not only in Ohio, but across the country. We need good leaders. And good leaders act in a certain way when they are building teams. We in masonry, as you know, have a system of appointing someone to a progressive line. So this message tonight will help you as if you're in that position that you're going to become master of your lodge or in a position that you will appoint someone to a progressive line. This will give you some insight in how you might go about that and what you might think about, because that officer team in the lodge is will become one of your inner circles. So how I want to start tonight, I want to start by reading you a list of seven names, and I want you to listen and see if you recognize any of them. Okay, here are the names: Francis Geale, Charles Batchelor, Francis Upton, Ludwig Bohm, John Cruisi, John Lawson, and Martin Force. Now, you're all unmuted. Did anybody recognize any of those names? Yes, no?
I did not know.
Okay, good. Oh, good. I'm glad you're awake. Okay. I didn't either. And I'm going to guess you didn't have a clue who any of these guys are. Well, you know what? I didn't either. Till I found out that all of these guys invented the light bulb. Really. These gentlemen invented the light bulb. And I know what you're thinking. You're saying, what? Any fifth grader knows that Thomas Edison invented the light bulb. Well, while it's true that Edison's name has been attached to the creation of the light bulb, the other men were members of Edison's lab team who were an integral part of the experiments that led to the successful working bulb. It was on October 22nd, 1879, the first successful bulb burned for over 13 hours. So the idea of the electric light bulb was Edison's. Charles Batchelor was the man who produced the working drawings for that bulb. Upton proved the concept that Edison had mathematically. Bohm and Cruisi built the light bulb, physically built it, and then Geale, Lawson, and Force were the testers, and they tested it many, many times. So the credit went to Edison, obviously, because his name's synonymous with the light bulb. But the important point to be made here is that we have a light bulb today because Edison understood the concept that nothing important is created alone. So to accomplish great things as a leader and a leader in your lodge, you must have an inspired, intelligent, collaborative team who have abandoned their egos and contribute unselfishly to the mission and vision of the lodge, and more specifically to the particular task the team has been assigned. Edison was, if you read about him and his leadership qualities, he was a secure leader. He was not afraid to surround himself with men of intelligence who had, first of all, a passion for learning, and all of them had a commitment to excellence. And so Edison, had Dr. Maxwell existed then, he would have understood what Dr. Maxwell explained in the Law of the Inner Circle: a leader's potential and ultimately his success is determined by those closest to him. So that's an amazing thing you can take away about the light bulb, and that there were, you know, a team behind that, the success of that light bulb. You know, it really always amazes me when I find leaders who think they have all the answers. They believe, and you all know some, that their title has somehow instantly transformed them into the smartest person in the world. And typically, they are in some ways insecure. And they are not willing to surround themselves with team members who may be smarter than they are or who complement them with strengths in the areas the leader is weak in. They are just afraid in some cases, that they have a fear that, someone will outshine them. So I just become amazed. The more I study leadership and the more I study the organizations whose leader takes this attitude and surrounds himself with intelligent people, just how successful they are. And it always amazes me that people don't see that and duplicate that, especially in masonry. So if you think about this, if your success as a leader is determined by those who are on your team, in your department, the officers in your lodge, and you can select them or influence how they are selected, I think it makes sense for you to have at least an officer inner circle that would ensure your success. Why would you purposely, if you can influence who becomes officers, why would you purposely surround yourself with average people or people who's do not have the skills that are needed for the organization? It just makes perfect sense to me. Several years ago, Google, and it's pretty common usage now, built a social connection application similar to Facebook that they call Google Plus. And one of the main features that they believed at the time they developed this application that was an improvement over Facebook was the ability to further limit who sees something you post by allowing you to create what they call circles, by designating who are members of your various circles, and then you can limit who sees what. For example, if you don't use Google Plus, you can create a family circle. So those connected to you, that your immediate family or those you allow in your family circle, are just that. You could have a circle of your cohorts and peers at work, a work circle. You could have a Masonic Lodge circle. So if you get caught at a family event with a funny hat on at a kid's birthday party, you can only, and you just get it posted to your family circle so you don't get laughed at work, or something inappropriate gets to the wrong people. So you get to pick who knows what about you. So a leader in building inner circles can have multiple inner circles just like Google Plus. And they can be formal, like those defined by the structure of a Masonic lodge and the officers. That could be your officer inner circle. Or they could be informal. Many of the United States presidents had informal circles, a group of people who were advisors who didn't have formal titles in the administration, but they were there available to counsel and advise the president. The kitchen cabinet, as it's referred to. So that's an inner circle of advisors. And so a leader's inner circle, if you build one, should be ideally a handpicked group that each member displays specific qualities, and they have specific talents, and they are the type of person that information can be shared with them, and that information won't go any further. So what I'd like to do in just the remaining minutes I planned for this presentation here is go over some of those qualities, talents, and questions you might consider when building a leadership inner circle. And certainly these will apply as I indicated, if you were going to be Master of Your Lodge and had to make an appointment. Who might you pick and why might you pick them? Because you're asking them to come alongside you and help lead. And so you want to be very careful, as I said before, who you let into that circle. So here are some that are just stand out in my mind is things I look for when I'm building a team. The first thing I look for excuse me, I'd take a sip of water. The first thing I look for, because a leader needs this, is I surround my people with people I can trust. There's a leadership author. His name is Patrick Lencioni. I've talked to him. I've talked about him before. He wrote a book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And he defines the first element of a dysfunctional team as an absence of trust. So if you build your inner circle with people you can trust, then you can be honest with them. They can be honest with you. You can engage in dialogue and debate without fear of, you know, one of them holding back some critical information you might need as a leader, or have that, you know, suspect their intentions. Well, why did he say that? What's he thinking? What's he really thinking? You don't want that. And I think the element of trust is a number one attribute. It creates a safe environment for the leader and his inner circle. Now, if you think about the Masonic organization, we got a great jump ahead of any other organization, I think, is because trust is one of the basic values that among many that our fraternity runs on. So you should be able, among your Masonic brothers, to build that circle. Build it with people that you can trust if you're picking Masonic brothers. Now, let's be realistic. People are people. So if you're picking, you may get somebody who is one of those weak leaders who thinks his title makes him special. And that may be somebody, even though he's a brother, you can't trust him with the task involved here. It happens. I've seen it happen. So trust someone you can trust. Number two, attitude. I believe that to be an effective leader, you've got to have a whole bunch of essential positive qualities. But if I'm building a team and looking to add members to my leadership inner circle, those I'll work with, I want a positive attitude. I've been a fan of Saturday Night Live since the beginning, and I'm 65 years old. So, some of you younger guys listening might not remember this early sketch, but they used to do a sketch, trying to think who used to do it, but it featured a couple called the Winers. They were Doug and Wendy Winer, and the sketches would involve this couple in restaurants standing in lines, and they'd be whining about everything. The line's too long. Our dinner is not coming quick enough. It's bad weather. The food, they'd whine about other people. Anyway, you get the picture. I don't want whiners in my inner circle. I want them to have this positive outlook on life, and the leadership from the team will create this, this attitude in the team will create a positive team atmosphere, and everyone will be lifted up. There's another lesson in another law of John Maxwell's books that talks about the qualities of picking, what kind of qualities do you look for when you're picking and trying to spot future leaders? And one of those is a person who lifts up other people. In other words, by his positive attitude, he can encourage and create a positive influence on the other team members. Attitude, I think it's very important. The third thing, and I'm getting close to the end here, so I don't want to talk all the time. I want some input from you this evening. But number three, I like to have people around me who know more than I do, who are smarter than I am. Because, you know, as leaders, we should be constant learners. And I like having intelligent people around me because it allows me to learn. And having intelligent people around you as a leader just stretches you. And to me, it's... that's really kind of neat to learn something that you didn't know before. And just by having someone who wants to be a part of your inner circle, someone who advises you to, you know, tell you what they know so you can improve yourself, it just improves the entire team and the entire organization. I had the privilege of working, some of them are gone now, but a leadership team, we taught leadership for Shriners International. I led the team, and three of the guys had PhDs, okay? One of them several. They were almost all of them smarter than I was. And it was just an enriching experience. So pick people who are smarter than you are. The other thing, the last thing about attributes is find other leaders. Selecting others for your inner circle to build your team. Selecting other proven leaders as a part of your inner circle allows you to get in opinions that have been filtered through what John Maxwell calls a leadership lens. If you remember from the Mason's Lead Better Workshop, I talked about developing a Masonic lens. Bless you.
Thank you.
And that Masonic lens was learning the tools and lessons of Masonry so well that they become a part of you and you almost function automatically as a Mason. You view situations as a Mason through all of that Masonic knowledge of tools and lessons. Well, this is the same thing. It's a leadership lens, though. You become so schooled in practices and leading as with effective qualities that everything you do is filtered through this leadership lens. I like guys around me that think the same way and view the things the same way. In that 21 Irrefutable Laws book of Dr. Maxwell, he has a law of intuition. And in that, he says leaders are very intuitive in the areas of their strength. So if you get other leaders in your inner circle who have strengths that you in areas you may be weak in, they intuitively lead from those strengths. And so your inner circle, as you complement each other, raises the group's level of intuitiveness. The officer group for your lodge just naturally reacts as leaders. So, you know, that's really important to have leaders in your inner circle. And leaders, typically through this leadership lens, they think way before others think of things, and they're always thinking ahead. They're thinking farther than others do. So those are four things that I look for in team members. And there's also a couple of questions that I would like to bring up in conclusion about what you should ask when considering, ask yourself about someone when you're considering bringing someone into an inner circle. First one is, do they have a high level of influence with others? And in the Mason's Lead Better Workshop, we spend a whole lot of time talking about leaders building positive relationships with others, understanding who they are, understanding their skills. So if you bring someone in that has a high level of influence with others, it helps build the team. Maxwell talks about in his law of influence that leadership is influence. And we've also referred to the five levels of leadership. And as you rise up those levels, you're building influence. The higher you go, the more people you have connected with, and the greater is your influence. So asking someone into your inner circle who has a high level of influence in the organization already just instantly gives you as a leader and the rest of your team more connectivity by having access to relationships that you've not built yet. So ask that question. Hey, are they an unknown or have they spent some time building connections? It will always help your team. Last thing I always ask does this person I'm considering have a strategic position in the organization that would be of a benefit to me as a leader? And I think I halfway referred to why this is important as I referred to the Shrine Leadership Team I was involved with. The person who selected for the individuals for that team initially, I think it was back in 2005, felt it very important to include a man who was already an officer in the international organization and in time would be head of the organization. And this was a purposeful selection for our leadership teaching inner circle that gave us someone who could provide strategic connection to all of these other international officers. So our inner circle in that case included someone who was a member of a very exclusive inner circle and had the ability to make, who had the ability to make decisions that would help our team's task be successful and grow. And so by making a strategic selection in that case way back then, that helped our task and our purpose of leadership education just become that more vibrant because we had a connection there that we couldn't have had on our own. Well, that is basically the law of the inner circle and why inner circles are important. And again, it stresses the importance of building relationships as you rise up the level of in your lodge. And that gives you some of the qualities and talents you should look for, excuse me, as you are selecting someone to be a part of your lodge team. And certainly all of this applies to, an inner circle you would build for other reasons. Let's say you're a head of the community organization or a part of a community organization. All of this stuff applies to that as well. The law of inner circle says that your effectiveness as a leader is going to be determined by those that you bring around and allow to be close to you. So I appreciate the time to present this. I just thought it's such an important thing for a leader to understand that you get the right people involved in your leadership team. Well, that's the message for tonight. We've certainly got plenty of time. Anybody have any comments about what I talked about? Any questions, any experience in regard of maybe getting the right person in their leadership team or the wrong person? The floor is wide open. We've got everybody unmuted, so just jump right in there and identify yourself.
Mike, I'd like to comment on the surrounding yourself with people who know more than you do. Sorry, this is Mike Kirkeb from Nevada.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah.
You talked about how it allows you to learn more, which is absolutely true. But I think from a leadership standpoint too, it also allows you to focus on what the vision is for the team, what the end goal is for the team, right? And allows you to step away from being a part of every task that is needed to complete that goal because you have people who know how to do the different things better than you do. And because of that, you're able to achieve that goal faster and better and exceed most often whatever expectations were set for that team, right, by surrounding yourself with people who are like that.
Oh, yeah, good point. I often talk about selecting in a team. Well, we used I always use the lodge officer situation, where in a lot of lodges I've seen where, let's say, the junior warden always performs this function. I think in my lodge, the junior warden always is in charge of soliciting men, brothers, to attend all of our inspections at other lodges. And I point out that sometimes just by assigning that task to that position, the man may not be the right guy for the job. You need kind of a sales guy to call people up and say, hey, we'd like for you to come out, here's why, and come on, do it. And so the point you made, the master in this case doesn't have to, if he's got the right guy with the right talent doing the job, like you say, he doesn't have to worry about all of that nitty-gritty. He focuses on keeping, as Jim Collins says, driving the bus, right?
Mm-hmm.
He focuses on those broad, are we heading toward our vision? Are we reaching our goals? And if we're not, where do I need to adjust? Good point. Really good point. Someone else got some thoughts about getting the right people on your leadership team? Bad experiences, good experiences? Let me see if I can call on somebody. Well, that's all right. If you don't have comments, I want to be very open and allow you to comment. And if you have something else that you'd like to bring out tonight, a question that's in your live on the call and something you want to ask about, I have Brother Kirkab here to answer every question you got, right, Mike? Brothers on the call, think about that. But, Mike, why don't you right now just remind everybody about your book and what's transpired here. You did it last month, I think.
Okay.
Tell us about what you just did recently, so we'll be aware of that.
Well, the Working Tools of Leadership, Applying the Teachings of Freemasonry, is the book. And the minor point is that I released a second edition of it, where I reformulated. There was a journal in the back of the first edition, and what did was reformatted, so each journal section applies to the working tool that is discussed in that corresponding chapter that has some guiding questions for reflection. But more importantly, one of the biggest additions to this book was there was a brother by the name of Michael Clevenger, who actually was kind enough to write the foreword for that. So I think that's probably one of the biggest improvements that I made in the book. But thank you for allowing me to plug that. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, and let me expand on what Mike said about the questions at the end of each chapter. It leads you to, in the chapter, if you've not read the book, read it. It leads you to think about that tool and that's what we did in Mason's Lead Better, is give you a method to think about how you would use. For example, I just flipped open the book to the 24-inch gauge journal exercise. And Mike asked the question, how can you adjust your schedule to gain more time with your family, be more productive at work, or achieve a long-term goal? Use the space below to write down the biggest time wasters in your life and what you will do to remove them. This is, and he's added questions like that at the back of each chapter. And by journalizing and answering those questions, you make these tools practical. And that's Michael's goal in this book. That's been the main goal of part of the main goals of Mason's Lead Book. And it makes you think about, hey, what am I going to do with this? You know, I got a 24-inch gauge, and I always talk about, you know, in the ritual, it tells you to divide it in three equal parts. Well, how many days have you had lately that were automatically divided into three equal parts? Not many, you know. There's not a big whistle that blows at the end of each 8-hour period. So it all tangles together as spaghetti, right, Mike?
You know, what's interesting, kind of tying that back, tying the working tools back into this evening's discussion, when you're looking at the determining your inner circle, right, your trust attitude, surround yourself with people who know more than you do, you're actually applying a lot of these tools to that team, right? You know, it's trust. Okay, you're applying the level or the plumb to determine, okay, you know, is my team trustworthy? Attitude, right? That's got the compasses written all over. You're applying the compasses to your team to determine, what is my attitude? Are we keeping our passions, you know, and our attitudes in check? You know, the 24-inch gauge, knowing more than, you know, we do, surrounding ourselves so that way we're not wasting our time on things that would just drain our energy and drain our ability to get stuff done by allowing those who are strong in certain areas to run with it, right?
And
just using that time better. So I think it's actually a really good tie-in.
Good point, yeah.
Evening.
Yeah, that getting the right people. As my Jim Collins says, I referred to the bus. Not only getting the right people on that bus, and the bus being a metaphor for your journey, your lodge vision, your where I want to take my lodge, getting the right leadership team put together, and then once you get them on the bus, heading the same direction, you get them in the right seats, and that's what Mike just referred to. And the 24-inch gauge applied to relying on each of your inner circle's talents will get you there using the 24-inch gauge. Thanks, Michael. Anybody else have any thoughts here as we're talking about good team members?
Hey, Mike, how are you? Alan Chamberlain in Grove City, Ohio. I actually emailed you today send me the PDF links that were missing on the website, so I appreciate that.
Okay, Alan, you're the guy I referred to that prompted this whole lesson tonight, you know? I appreciate
Indeed.
That. And I appreciate, Alan, knowing those links were broken.
Yeah, no, that's always nice to know when something isn't working, right, when you didn't know about. So I think I can add a little value when it comes to attitude. I think I can add some value in the aspect of attitude. I am a baseball coach. I coach multiple sports, but baseball is my primary sport. And as any brother listening to this phone call, played baseball or is a fan of baseball, it's the ups and downs. It's a game based around failures. So it's easy for players to lose their perspective and to get the wrong attitude, and which at the end of the day affects their effort. So we use a program that I call APE, Control Your APE, APE, which is an acronym for Attitude, Perspective, Effort. And I found that if we can control our perspective, realize what we're doing, why we're doing it, the goals that we have, both short-term and long-term, and how we intend to reach those, and, you know, one play of 2 minutes in a game shouldn't affect our short-term or long-term goals, and incite your perspective. The attitude is easy to keep in check, which all in turn, in our opinion, affects the effort that's displayed on the field or, as we like to tell our young men, displayed in life.
Okay, cool. So tell us a little more about that. Tell me, you know, I saw your website address there. Tell us a little bit more about this.
Well, basically what I come to find out through my coaching career is I was teaching guys how to hit and throw and do all of those things. I took a position as a head coach in high school in the inner city here in Columbus, Ohio. and come to find the challenges that were involved, but trying to build a team out of guys that didn't know how to play as well in some of the situations they were in. So I really focusing hard on, I knew we weren't going to win many baseball games. We were young and nobody had any experience. But that didn't mean we couldn't set them up for some tools to achieve life, to give them a little bit better of an opportunity to improve the situation that they were currently in. So we utilized a lot of these tools. I have a teacher, Justin Deemer is his name, and he has a program that talks about the mental game. So I kind of got away from fundamentals, and I got clearly on the mental side of it, how to succeed through the lies, how to not let what we call mental bricks hold us down. And I'll use the analogy of getting ate up on a curveball on a 2-2 count.
You know
that curveball's coming. I know it was coming. You knew it was coming. The umpire knew it was coming. And it still ate you up. And, you know, you have the right to be fine with that, but we try to teach the guys to sit down and process what they can do the next time so it doesn't happen to them again. And we want them to take those skills and not have the mental brick, is the analogy we use with the players. I tell them to put a brick in their back pocket and go play shortstop. Well, why would I do that, coach? That would be uncomfortable. Well, then why would you put negative thoughts into your head and go out and play shortstop? Because at the end of the day, it's going to affect your attitude and your effort, drives the team down. Yeah, and we got a big eight that we use, you know, and it says control your eight. Yes. All players, we carry a brick from game to game to game to game. All players assign that brick, and every time we win, we put another tally mark on it. Guys rub the brick, but it's just a constant reminder of process it and move on. Don't let one hiccup in the road deter the entire project, or, you know, referring to masonry, if you're trying to make something happen in your lodge, don't let it deter the entire project. If you're referring to baseball, don't let it affect the entire game.
Yeah, are you that's really, really cool, Alan. Have you read any of John Wooden?
Isn't he
he was one of those guys too. I mean, preparation, not only mentally, and this sounds a lot like you just reminded me as you talked about some of the messages Coach Wooden would bring out about preparing his athletes. So I thought you might be well-read in that regard.
And I guess how that can all relate to this evening's topic and to blend it in what we've been talking about is as I build my inner circle, I hope to be in line one day, maybe as soon as this year, who knows. But as I build my inner circle, I'm looking for someone who can control the eight. I'm not looking for somebody who doesn't get frustrated or, you know, have moments of, you know, this is frustrating, why am I doing this? But I'm looking for someone who can process it, continue on with the plan that we set forth, and get past that through perspective, good attitude, and strong effort. Because we're all human. We all get frustrated, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Giving up's easy. So how do we equip them to not give up? And that eight goes a really long way. It's had a tremendous impact on all my players. I have a lot of guys now that are looking at potential D1 scholarships, and these are the thing called – It's a good thing. Control your eight. That's what I'm looking for when I bring in and build teams.
Alan, that's really cool. I appreciate knowing about that, and thanks for jumping in there, and thanks for sending me the email because it led into the tonight. And now, so your guys, your coaching are high school guys, right?
Yeah, I resigned from my high school position last year. 2014 was my last year there.
Okay.
But I run a travel baseball organization here in Columbus, the Central Ohio Jaguars, and we host tournaments, and my team's now 16, and they're really good. They're a really good baseball team, and they're all going out for college, and they're trying to – we talk about short-term and long-term goals. The short-term goal is to win the game. The long-term goal is to find ourselves in a college situation to better our lives.
Yeah, my wife and I have one son who played three sports, three in high school, and one of them, lacrosse, took him to a college scholarship. So I understand, and because of that, I can see all of those sports, because he was surrounded by men like yourselves who took an attitude that, you know, this is a game. We want you to do the best you can, this is a much bigger thing than just playing a game. My son was blessed with coaches like the attitude you've just talked about tonight. And it really made a whole difference in his life. It really did. So I applaud you for what you do. I really do. I really do. And certainly now how many years you've been a Mason now?
Actually, 1 year, a week ago, I received my EA degree 1 week ago, about 6 days ago. So I'm a little over a year.
Oh, okay, good. And tell me your lodge again.
Grove City, 689.
Oh, Grove City. Okay. Well, did you get a chance to be a part of one of the Mason Lead Better workshops?
I did not last year. Work was so busy. I heard you talking about it earlier today, and I'll definitely be looking for those emails and information.
Okay. Well, I would like to have you in one of those. Again, thanks for speaking up tonight. I'd like to meet you in person sometime and hear more. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And also let you know that I took your story today from your videos about the traveler. Really loved that. That's a great talk on perspective. When you talked about leadership and self-assessment, you know, the traveler who comes through and asks the old man what he thought people of the town. And that's exactly what I talk to my players about. That's perspective on how you look at things.
Exactly right. Well, thanks. Of course, that wasn't an original one. I heard that from somebody else. But that is a good story about perspective. So. Well, thanks, Alan.
All right, thank you, Mike.
Appreciate what you've contributed tonight. Anyone else have any? Someone else? Well, I thought someone else had something to say. We have a few more moments. We have about 8 minutes. I'll ask again if you have no comments or no questions. I'll just say this and. And if you do, and think of something before we cut off, just interrupt me. But, this is leadership is having been around the study of leadership for now 10 years, intensive study of leadership and being on the side of being a leader. It's not an easy task. And as I've said in the Mason's Lead Better workshop, we all want the same thing of our lodges, and that is that our lodge is strong. We have men who actively want to participate. I think I've mentioned on previous calls some of the dreams that I heard from the men around the state of Ohio, some things they want to see. They want greater community involvement. They want greater brotherhood. And all of these things are accomplished by some of the things we talked about, but also about relationship building. And so I just encourage you to get involved in knowing your brothers. So when you do come to a position where, hey, I've got to make some choices as the leader of my lodge about who I bring into my team, who might I appoint to start this progressive line to lead our lodge someday, that's an important decision for the future of your lodge. And some of these things we've talked about are very, very important. So I encourage you to, first of all, improve yourselves. Second of all, get some leadership books and start studying leadership if you have any desire to become a leader or become a better leader. Go to Freemason University. We spent a lot of time putting together two of John Maxwell's definitive works. The first one, The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. The second one, The 5 Levels of Leadership. We've got Greg Smith doing two effective communication videos. We've got Dwayne Kimberling doing Just some excellent management, lodge management type videos. So I encourage you to not only have to start that study yourself, as Brother Alan talked about, he did, but encourage your team members and encourage those younger members of the lodge who you want and think will become the leaders of your lodge when you're no longer there to lead. Encourage them to do the same. That's my sales pitch for tonight. So if nothing else, I just want to, again, remind you that on October, what did I say, 20, I'm scrolling up here. Our next call is October 28th. It's a Wednesday. I encourage you to be on that call. I encourage you to go to Grand Lodge, stop by and see us at the Mason's Lead Better table and get ready to sign up for our programming for next year. Again, I thank those on the call for taking the time to listen live and offer their perspective and their insight, and those listening later. Thanks again for being a part of this program and taking the time to be a better Mason, be a better leader. So with that, brothers, why don't we all say goodnight to each other, and we'll sign off. Good night, everyone.
Good night, brothers.
Good night. We'll see you next time now. Bye now.